It's Wednesday, March 24th. We created vaccines in less than a year, but how long will it take us to cure this? We start here. Colorado authorities give new information about the shooting that killed 10 and the man who allegedly did it.
Nobody who was shot by the suspect survived.
Amid renewed calls for stricter gun laws, police say the killer bought his weapon just days before the attack. Experts say this might just be the beginning.
They expected to see a rise in every type of thing that's caused by trigger.
Why the pandemic might have actually set the stage for more mass shootings. And how much are jurors expected to know about the most infamous killing in years?
They asked them a lot of questions about, you know, whether they had seen the video of Floyd's death.
The jury is set to examine the death of George Floyd. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. You can often tell how the country is doing on days where the American flag is at half-staff, whether we're facing a crisis, what we're mourning. Well, last week, President Biden ordered the White House to lower its flags in memory of the 8 people in Atlanta killed in a shooting spree. That flag finally went back up Monday evening.
Take a look at this image of the flag at the White House.
Well, my colleague Karen Drivers, who works at the White House, she pointed out yesterday morning the flag was back at half staff.
President Biden has once again now ordered the flags to be lowered to half staff, the victims now in Boulder.
Because of a new, even more deadly mass shooting. It had been raised barely half a day.
Just an extraordinary week here in America.
I was upstairs and my mom was watching her soap operas and she started screaming.
Turbo shooter is inside. He just shot at his wife.
Copy, active shooter inside.
And she said, oh no, oh no, that's Ricky's store. And I said, what, mom? And she said, there's a shooting at the King Supers where Ricky works.
We told you that in Colorado, 10 people had been killed at a King Supers grocery store in Boulder. King Supers is a chain. It's owned by Kroger. The lone suspect, a man led out of the building alive, is in custody. We did not have a ton more to tell you than that. Well, over the last 24 hours, there are a lot more details and a question that has grown kind of distant over the last year, but that is being asked now much more loudly. What are we going to do to prevent more shootings like this? So let's take you to Boulder, Colorado right now. ABC's chief national correspondent Matt Gutman is on scene. So first off, Matt, are we getting a better sense now of how the shooting played out?
We know a fair bit more, Brad. Police say that the suspect showed up at that King Supers market just after 2:30, driving a C-Class Mercedes sedan.
Something just happened here, guys. Look, there's people lying in the street, guys.
Pretty soon after he began opening fire, he was wearing a green tactical vest. He had an AR-15-style rifle and a handgun.
Holy s***! There's a shooter! Active shooter! Get away!
And I said it right now. I said, just don't look anywhere. Don't hesitate. Don't stand up and just run. Just run.
One of the most chilling aspects of the affidavit that we've seen is that the suspect allegedly shot one man outside the market and then stood over him and shot multiple additional rounds.
Once we got outside, I noticed that there were people laying in the street and they weren't moving, and instantly I started running for them. And my son grabbed me and said, no, we can't do anything. They're out in the open. And so we ran.
Paul was in line to go get a COVID shot. Third person in line, and that's when at least one shooter came in and killed the woman at the front of the line.
After I was running, I definitely heard more shots.
And then he moved on inside.
Pops. Pop, 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 pop.
From eyewitnesses, I understand that he was just going methodically from place to place, shooting people.
They ran upstairs to hide. They hid in a coat closet, standing up for 45 minutes. Extraordinarily terrifying. Of course, the little one saying, yeah, and, you know, the coats weren't long enough to hide our feet as they were standing behind the coats in the closet.
One of the most horrific factoids from this shooting is that nobody who was shot by the suspect survived. There was nobody wounded. There was nobody left in the field for medics to tend to, except for the shooter himself, who almost an hour later was finally shot through the thigh by SWAT teams or officers and then surrendered. Nobody has an idea of what the motive might have been. And authorities say it could take a full year to complete this investigation.
Well, and so, you know, we don't know a motive necessarily. Do we know anything more about the suspect, Matt, who he is? Like, he's a U.S. citizen born overseas, right?
He's a 21-year-old man born in Syria, emigrated to the United States when he was 3 years old. We understand he was a high school wrestler. We do know that he purchased that long gun on March 16th, barely a week before the shooting itself. And we understand from his sister-in-law that he was seen allegedly playing with the gun in the house over the past couple of days, and his family told him to stop, and he put it away until Monday came along.
Well, and that's clearly where the questions are going to be next, right? Is what kind of guns was he using? How did he get them? And how easy is it for someone to procure guns like these, depending on whatever, your mental state, your circumstances at the time? What do we know about that as far as Colorado and Boulder?
Colorado is not a very difficult place to buy weapons. In fact, just a week before this young man purchased his AR-style weapon, a judge in Boulder threw out a case, an attempt by the city of Boulder to ban long guns and assault-style rifles in the city. So, you know, just the irony of that is pretty interesting.
Well, and so what happens next, Matt? Like, you know, we talk about President Biden. He made stopping gun violence a key platform on his campaign. Well, now he's in the White House. His party has control of the House. It has control of the Senate. What does he and the Democratic Party plan to do with that power?
I want to be very clear.
Well, President Biden yesterday said that he is going to act.
I don't need to wait another minute, let alone an hour, to take common sense steps that will save the lives in the future. And
he wants to close the loopholes. He effectively wants to ban assault-style weapons.
The Senate should immediately pass. Let me say it again. The United States Senate, I hope some are listening, should immediately pass the two House-passed bills that close loopholes in the background check system.
And that's something that he worked on in his tenure as a senator, something that he is signaling that he wants to work on as a president. But obviously, this is a very touchy issue in America.
Today, a lobby day like no other in Richmond. This as gun rights activists protested in a rolling caravan instead of a crowd at the Virginia State Capitol like years past.
Just to give you a sense of what it was like in Richmond just before the inauguration, we went to a Second Amendment rally.
I grew up when this country was free, and it's no longer free, and it's getting less free.
And people said that this is the one thing that they would be willing to die over.
It is completely wrong to disarm me. It's anti-constitutional, and
they would not let anybody take their guns away. They believe it is the most elemental right in the United States of America.
I've already committed to bringing universal background checks legislation to the floor of the Senate.
What happens in this committee after every mass shooting is Democrats propose taking away guns from law-abiding citizens because that's their political objective.
And he is going to face a lot of headwind in whatever he tries to do in turning back the facility with which these weapons can be sold.
Nevin Studinski, 23. Ricky Odds, 25.
And, you know, this memorial that's growing right outside the supermarket, there are a lot of anti-gun signs up. One of them is a red AK-47 style gun, and the blood is sort of dripping off of it, and the question is when.
This question is for the chief.
Sure.
It seems that, you know, in describing the names of the deceased and what happened, that this wasn't just about your work today, that this was personally very difficult for you. Can you describe what emotions you're going through right now?
No, it's hard. It's challenging. I live three blocks up the street from that store. You're worried about your neighbors. You're worried about your partner. You're worried about everything when you get that call.
And I think that's a question that a lot of Coloradans are asking. They've obviously suffered so much from mass shootings over the years. And incidentally, this young man, Ahmad Alisa, was born 3 days before Columbine. Just to give you a sense of how little we have progressed since the mass shooting in Columbine that sort of made everybody so aware of this kind of violence in America.
All right, Matt Gutman there in Boulder. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
And it's tempting in this moment to say, wow, right as the pandemic is showing signs of subsiding, mass shootings are back, which isn't exactly right. Yes, this is the most deadly mass shooting we've seen in over a year, but mass shootings themselves, they haven't gone anywhere. Let's go to Josh Margolin. He's ABC's chief investigative reporter. Josh, I mean, what are law enforcement seeing right now when it comes to mass shootings? What's the reality?
Well, first of all, Brad, can we just not take a moment to just acknowledge just how terribly depressing that it is that the pandemic is ending and it seems like we're just going back to the future to a regular stream of mass shootings like we saw before the pandemic began a year ago.
The horror surrounding a mass shooting scene like last year's in El Paso has given way to a new threat. COVID-19 is different, rolling, unending, solitary.
Law enforcement, when the pandemic began, said that, yes, we will likely see a decrease in mass shootings, like a decrease in crime in the near term. That was last March, April, May, when the lockdowns were extreme.
What do you believe is behind this huge drop-off in mass shootings?
The opportunity hasn't been there because we are not gathering in public spaces.
But law enforcement also said that the public should be prepared, that going forward, these were going to return. And in fact, they might well come back with more force. And that's what we've been seeing. We've seen more crime.
Next to the disturbing rise in gun violence across the country, hundreds shot in New York, Chicago, Philly, Los Angeles, and other major cities.
Two extreme mass shootings with high numbers of fatalities in less than a week.
Given what we saw in Atlanta last week and now in Boulder, Colorado in the last 24 hours, is this what we're now going to deal with as we emerge from this pandemic?
And on top of what we've just seen in the last week, Brad, let's remember, mass shootings have been steadily going up.
In 2018, there were 337 mass shootings. By last year, 2020, that number had almost doubled to 611.
Just going back to 2020 for a second, like the pandemic is getting started. Everyone's staying in their house. Everyone's like, wow, you're going to see crime go down. And it does for a hot second, but then it comes back so much more. Like, why did it rise so quickly? Is there a working theory as to why?
We would tend to think that people would be just so thrilled to be able to start getting out of their homes that they would just be so happy and there wouldn't be a need to commit a terrible act of violence. But experts that study this say that targeted violence, mass casualty attacks like these things, they are oftentimes prompted by a trigger.
We know that young people are at home in sometimes abusive homes. We know that there's increases in depression and hopelessness. We know that people are losing their jobs, that relationships are hurting. Those are often triggers.
What's happened in the pandemic is that you've had economic collapse on a major scale. You've had sickness on a major scale. You've had death on a major scale.
So all those triggers.
All the triggers. So everybody in the country, everybody in the world has basically gone through these catastrophic events that could lead to it. So what you then have to do, you multiply the number of people that have the triggering events and you do the average about the number of people that might act out in the course of any given year. And all of a sudden you start seeing why we would see an explosion in this type of violence. It's terrible. The truth is the experts are saying and have been saying for the last year, not only did they terribly expect to see a rise in mass casualty attacks, they expected to see a rise in every type of thing that's caused by triggers, all the bad stuff, all the stuff that is a sign of people being desperate.
Methamphetamine overdose deaths are up by about a third.
They are not just one single drug. We're seeing multiple drugs.
Many partners are quarantined with their abusers and cannot get away.
We had more arrests of anarchist violent extremists than in the prior 3 years combined.
So now, like you said, we were seeing like all these mass shootings of 3, 4, 5 people. Well, now we're seeing 8 people killed at a time, 10 people killed at a time. Is there a sense among experts that this could keep getting worse?
Yes. People are starting to get out of their homes. People are starting to gather. So there you wind up having the groupings of people together, which is where you have a lot of these mass casualty attacks like we've seen over the last number of years. In addition, this is the uniquely American problem we deal with every single time. Guns kill a lot of people at once. So you might have somebody who wants to act out, but if they're acting out with a knife, it would be terrible, of course, but they may not be able to kill 8 people at a time in quick succession.
Long lines have been reported at gun stores from California to Washington State to Ohio.
By far, the most common reported reason for buying a gun was protection against crime.
although nearly a third said they were reacting to lockdowns, fears of the government, COVID-19, and the 2020 election.
Let's not forget, during the pandemic, the nation was racked with fear. And when the nation is fearful, people buy guns. Guns were purchased in incredibly large numbers over the last year. So you had all these triggers, all this terrible collapse, all these problems in society, all these people who might feel desperate, substance abuse, other kinds of psychiatric problems. And on top of it, you have a lot more guns on the street.
Yeah, pandemic or not, like those guns are out there now. They're not going anywhere. Another reason Democrats are going to have this tough question today and going forward, is this the kind of issue that would actually make them do something drastic, like end the filibuster, something like that? All right, Josh Margolin, thanks.
Hey, Brett, thanks so much.
Next up on Start Here, the most shocking death of 2020 didn't involve a gun at all. That won't make the trial less difficult. We go to Minneapolis after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
If these recent acts of violence might galvanize change, locally, nationally, well, perhaps the most galvanizing killing in years is set for a trial. Yesterday, the final juror was selected in the trial of Derek Chauvin, the Minneapolis police officer who pressed his knee into George Floyd's neck as he took his final breaths. The eyes of the world are going to be on this trial. Well, Whitney Lloyd has had her eyes on this from the start. She's been covering this. Hey, Whitney.
Hey, Brad.
So what should we know about this jury? How did this work?
So we've got 15 jurors that have been selected. We expect that 14 of those jurors will be sworn and seated on Monday when opening statements are set to begin. That 15th juror is really just a backup in case somebody doesn't show up. The judge wanted to be sure that he had a full panel to start the case next week. So of those 14 jurors that are expected to be seated, 8 of them are white. 6 identify as people of color, including 4 who self-identify as Black. On the jury, there are 5 men and 9 women, and their ages range from their 20s up until 60s. So and it's about evenly split between younger and older jurors.
And because of COVID, because of security concerns with this particular trial, like it's not as many people in the courtroom as usual. So you and your fellow reporters have been watching live streams of this jury selection. What did that whole process tell you about what each side was looking for here? How does that impact what we're about to see?
Well, good morning, everyone. First of all, can everybody hear me? Give me a thumbs up.
Yeah, that's right. There were about 11 days of jury selection, and I didn't miss a second of it.
My name is Pete Cahill, and I'm one of the judges of the district court, and you have been summoned here as potential jurors in the case of State of Minnesota versus Derek Chauvin.
So obviously you're not going to find anyone, especially not in Hennepin County, Minnesota, that hasn't been exposed to a great deal of publicity about this case.
And we want to make sure that if you sit as a juror, you decide this case only on the evidence and on the law that I give you.
So they weren't really looking for people who had no knowledge of the case, but they were certainly looking for people who could be impartial and hear what the lawyers had to say in court and set aside anything that they might have heard prior to.
Do you think you could do that?
I do.
Okay.
You did indicate you have some empathy for the officers. Fair?
Fair. I said earlier, too, that I have empathy for George Floyd as well.
So they asked these jurors a lot of questions to try to get at their thoughts on a whole host of topics.
In terms of police reform, what are your thoughts on police reform?
I think there are good things and there are things that should be changed. But
things from Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter.
And the whole defund the police thing to me is lunacy.
What they felt the effect of the protests last summer were on Minneapolis.
A video, you may describe this video, was taken by a bystander.
They asked them a lot of questions about, you know, whether they had seen the video of Floyd's death.
Did you go on to a social media platform or some other website and watch the video from start to finish? Or are you referring to smaller clips and segments?
I mean, the first few times, I think it was just the smaller clips. And then there was one time where I saw a longer segment.
Okay.
How much of that video have they seen? Did they just see it in passing on the news? Did they seek it out online to watch the full video and inform themselves about what actually took place over the course of that 9 minutes that Chauvin was kneeling on Floyd's neck?
Okay, so that's really helpful. What will the jury now be told to consider? You said opening statements start Monday, and they're essentially going to be told to look at multiple charges, right? In fact, some of the charges seemed like they were changed in the middle of jury selection.
Yeah, that's right. So former officer Derek Chauvin is currently facing three charges, a second degree murder charge, a second degree manslaughter charge, and a third degree murder charge. And that third degree murder charge is actually what he was initially charged with in the days immediately following Floyd's death last summer by the Hennepin County District Attorney. But back in the fall, the presiding judge in this case, Judge Cahill, actually tossed out the third degree murder charge. And his rationale for that was that in Minnesota, third degree murder has historically applied when the defendant endangered more than one person. And at the time that he dismissed that charge, Judge Cahill said, look, in this case, Chauvin and the other officers, their actions were only directed at one person. That person, of course, being George Floyd.
Like if you thought he killed this one guy, like charge him with second degree murder. Like you can't just give extra charges that you don't think apply here.
Right. So that was his rationale. But then just last month, there was a higher court ruling in another case of another former Minneapolis police officer in which that officer's third degree murder charge was upheld. So basically that other ruling set a precedent that said now in Minnesota, third degree murder can apply in cases when you're only endangering one person. So because of that higher court ruling, Judge Cahill reinstated the third degree murder charge against Chauvin as jury selection was underway.
A watershed moment tonight for the heartbroken family of George Floyd.
You know, and another interesting thing to keep in mind here, Brad, is that while jury selection was underway, the city of Minneapolis came out and announced a record-setting $27 million settlement with the family of George Floyd.
Floyd family attorney Ben Crump calling it the largest pretrial settlement in a civil rights wrongful death case in U.S. history.
It's not just enough for America to say that Black Lives Matter. We have to show that Black Lives Matter by our actions.
Normally, we expect a criminal trial and a verdict to be decided before a civil case is resolved with a settlement. And obviously, the timing right in the middle of jury selection was an issue. After the settlement was announced, Judge Cahill called the jurors that had already been selected back and asked them questions about whether they had heard about the settlement and whether the news of the settlement would impact their ability to be impartial.
Two jurors told Judge Peter Cahill that massive settlement signaled the city believed Chauvin did something wrong, making it hard for them to be impartial.
And actually, two jurors that had already been selected ended up being dismissed. So, you know, the judge was not pleased with the timing of that announcement from the city.
And again, just unprecedented attention to every bit of this, which is why they got an extra juror just in case something comes up over the next week or so. All right, Whitney Lloyd, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. This was not what movie theaters had in mind for summer blockbuster season.
So what are you going to do?
I've lived a lot of lives, but I'm done running from my past.
And perhaps the biggest box office departure of the pandemic so far, Disney has decided to release Black Widow in theaters and on its Disney Plus app at the same time.
We have unfinished business.
Before I go further, I should say, Disney, yes, the parent company of ABC, but the reason this is really a huge deal is not that a movie is streaming. We have seen that elsewhere. It's not that you'd have to pay $30 for it. We saw that with Mulan and some other films. But this is a Marvel movie in July. Marvel is one of the most profitable studios on the planet right now. If Black Widow can sell half as many tickets as Avengers Endgame, we'd be talking about $1 billion. Disney pushed the release back last year because of the pandemic, so this move now either means A, Disney just does not think people are coming back to theaters in the same way in the foreseeable future, or B, its streaming platform has now become so important it's willing to tick off some movie theaters. Because that's the big question in the movie world right now. Will movie theaters matter going forward?
Let's all go to the lobby.
Because in the before times, you couldn't watch a movie at home until months after its theatrical premiere. That was not an accident. That was because of really strict contracts. Well, now, movie theaters have way less negotiating power. But they're not down for the count.
We need Kong. The world needs him.
Cineworld, the parent company of Regal, says it will reopen U.S. theaters next month. This is ahead of the Godzilla vs. Kong on April 2nd.
It's Godzilla.
Warner Brothers, which this year is releasing all of its films on HBO Max, just announced a deal with Regal Cinemas for next year. And this deal is, for the first 45 days of a new film, audiences can only see it in theaters. After that, your living room does become an option. A year ago, though, this waiting period was 3 months. Now, a month and a half.
Cinemark signed a deal in November to allow Universal Pictures to offer its movies to U.S. homes after only 17 days on theater screens.
Disney is going to hang back and see whether anyone actually comes out to see Black Widow in theaters. So, this next year is going to be a make-or-break moment for your local movie theater. Who says movies are just as good at home? What's the difference? You've not heard how bad my TV speakers are. But then again, snacks in my house, way better. The choices. Hit us up on Twitter, on Instagram. Tell us what movies you think you absolutely have to watch in a theater. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.